We have our guest on the line, Ronald Goldman, PhD. And as I mentioned earlier, Ron is a psychological researcher, speaker, writer. He identifies early experiences of the human individual associated with personal, social, and political problems. We're going to talk about the psychology of politics, and we are going to start with the word early because we need to define that because he goes way back with this. Let me warn you right now. All right, Ron, welcome to WSB. Welcome to Everything is Broken.
Thank you very much, Jim. Happy to be with you.
Super. We got a great connection today. We had a little trouble yesterday. It must have been the weather coming in. Ron, we've gone over your bio a little bit, and I think let's just hear a little more informally. Where did this all start for you? Where were you born and raised? Where'd you go to school? That kind of stuff.
Well, I grew up in Brookline, Massachusetts. Went to Columbia University and eventually returned to school some years later because I got interested in psychology. And what contributed to that was I was invited to attend a family ritual circumcision, which is not uncommon in the Jewish community. And my experience there was very distressing. This is done in the living room with dozens of people around, and the infant was screaming at the top of his lungs for over 20 minutes while his genitals were being cut, and it impressed me deeply. I wanted to get out of there as quick as I could, and so I went back and studied psychology, and actually wrote my dissertation on circumcision, and later wrote a book called Circumcision, the Hidden Trauma. And then after that, I founded a nonprofit educational organization called the Circumcision Resource Center. So, and this got me started in looking into other early childhood experiences, and I just basically saw lots of evidence that as a culture, we avoid thinking about these things, feeling these things, and keep committing the same actions and behaviors generation after generation. And I mean, this is somewhat of a human trait. If we're traumatized early in life, we tend to repeat that trauma later on the next generation.
Okay.
So, my effort here is to try to raise awareness about some of these things and encourage people to make more informed choices.
Good, good. Remind me at the end to come back to the center and its mission and philosophy. And the website, by the way, is circumcision.org, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, there it is. Okay, yeah, we're talking about early experiences, in this case, infancy. And in this case, tied to religious rituals. What do we know about infants as to what they recall or what they how they internalize trauma or?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, what happens here is the body remembers what the mind forgets. Most of us don't remember much of what we experienced before the ages of, say, 3, 4, 5 years old. But when we experience trauma, that's an emotional and body experience. And we have to protect ourselves somehow from this overwhelming experience. And partly what we do is we psychologically separate ourselves from the experience. We can't escape physically, so we escape psychologically. And then so the memory of the traumatic event becomes repressed out of consciousness, gets stored in the body in the form of tension, and can affect our behavior later. So it's been found, for example, in studies of infants, that those infants that have an angry temperament are also generally found to be the same individuals that express aggression at age 7. And just to take this another step further, another longitudinal study was conducted, and they found that those individuals that were aggressive at age 8 tended to be more likely than not the same individuals that expressed aggression at age 30. Hmm. So the point here is that the seeds of aggressive behavior can start as early as infancy, and you know we tend to ignore infancy, and it's typical to do that because we don't remember it.
Yep.
And but it creates big problems because then we do things to infants, which we'll be talking about.
Okay, I want to move on to politics, but perhaps because my career is in healthcare, I have to ask this one. When we store tension in the body, that usually manifests itself. Heart disease comes to mind. Is there research out there that has studied circumcised and uncircumcised males relative to longevity, chronic disease, all of that?
Well, here's the problem with circumcision. We have a strong cultural bias to want to believe that circumcision is a good thing or, at worst, harmless.
Okay.
Even today, as it so happens, the Centers for Disease Control has issued a position statement saying that circumcision so-called benefits outweigh the disadvantages. I could go on and on about critiquing that, but I know we have a limited amount of time. The point is that it's another example of our cultural bias to want to believe that circumcision is a good thing. And you can't trust the authorities on this because they have a long record going back over 100 years of coming up with potential claims about circumcision preventing treating certain diseases or afflictions, and basically, historically, they've all been refuted. Yeah. And the rest of the world thinks we're crazy to be doing this, quite frankly, circumcising.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult thing to stop this repeat trauma because, again, it's something we ignore and deny, and we have a compulsion to repeat it. So, again, getting into politics, imagine yourself in the position of an infant being circumcised. You have no power and control. Somebody is forcing this on you. You could be feeling anger, fear, certainly distrust, and you're not being protected by the people who you would expect to protect you, primarily your mother.
Right.
Okay? So it disrupts the relationship between the mother and child, and we'll talk about that, how that affects. So just to get a little more specific, we have here a loss of power and control connected with a traumatic early experience.
Right.
Well, what happens in politics is some people, I'm not saying everybody, but I'm saying some people act out this desire to regain power and control through different behaviors, and that could be and specifically political behaviors. So they could, for example, support things that they perceive to give them more power and control. They could accumulate wealth. They could join parties that have a lot of power and control over other people. It really affects the political dialogue because these people are highly motivated and driven to accumulate something that was lost to them when they were infants. And that is the connection, an example of a connection between early experience and later behavior that relates to politics.
Okay. Again, let's back up to a cultural phenomenon that obviously it ties into politics, but it goes deeper than that in a culture. In our culture, we have what we call a gun culture. Some would call it a gun fetish. whatever label you want to slap on it, we have a propensity to violence, and that manifests itself, particularly since we're an empire, in wars. Do you want to talk a little about that? About armament? Is that a control? Is that something we grab because of the trauma we went through?
I mean, one of the responses to this people might actually remember from their personal experience, and that is we do something called corporal punishment of children. It's very common in this culture for parents and caregivers to hit children because they're not behaving in a way that the parents or caregivers want. Okay, and there are decades of research on this to show the negative effects of corporal punishment. For example, it erodes trust for the child, weakens the bond between the child and the caregiver. It leads to aggressive behavior. Sometimes children have attacked their parents later because they have stored this resentment about being hit when they were younger. Some other children withdraw from this experience or become bullies. Lots of negative effects to corporal punishment. The evidence is very clear, and still we do it. And again, that gets back to the compulsion to repeat the abusive behavior. What parents do, and they're doing the best they can, and I respect that. Very often, parents do what was done to them. And it's difficult to accept the position, for example, that your parents deliberately hurt you or were acting negatively toward you. We want to, believe our parents because they're our most important connection in the world. So with our defenses about the harm of corporal punishment, again, we tend to accept that this is a good thing. And people will say, well, I was hitting them okay. Well, not necessarily.
Right.
A lot of people deny and ignore the harm that was done to them or are unable to make the connections between their present behavior and their early experience.
Right.
Again, what they do instead is they pass it on to their own kids. So getting back to the political, if people who are hit as children, they have repressed anger, they get the message that violence is acceptable. Yeah. Very strong message to me. Parents hitting you, that's a violent act. They're getting the message that's okay. They're getting a message that you want to control somebody's behavior, you use force.
Yep.
Well, no, I mean, how more direct can it be? You grow up and somebody's doing something or some group is doing something you don't like, you use force. You just pass along to them what was done to you. I mean, that's somewhat of a simplification, but with the limits of time here, that's an idea of how we get from early experience to political behavior.
Yeah, yeah. I'm struck by the closed loop that you just described, where it could start with a circumcision and end up with the bombing of Baghdad and shock and awe, which will indeed shock infants. There were infants that were underneath those bombs, okay? Not to make light of it. We shocked.
Oh, let me just, clearly point out in the context here is that, because someone experiences one of these, early traumas, whether it's circumcision or something else, does not necessarily mean
right.
that
Understood.
They're going to participate in certain behavior. What
yep.
what I'm saying here, to be clear, is that it will increase the likelihood. So if the likelihood of participating in, for example, violent behavior is 5%, I mean, just as a hypothetical example, without the early trauma, and if that's increased to, for example, 10 to 20% with the early trauma, that still means the majority of people are not going to commit these antisocial behaviors.
Okay.
But it certainly is a significant increase from the lower percentage to the higher percentage in the hypothetical example. So we're talking about something which is a minority behavior, but still gets significantly affected by early trauma.
Right. Okay, very good, very good. Let's pick a more neutral politics here for a second. Conservatives and progressives both feel passionately that they're right.
Yep.
We're right, they're wrong, how does that, what's the psychology of politics relative to that?
Well, again, if you want to, connecting that to early experience, It's very difficult to question something that somebody's believed for decades, which is also connected to their early experience. If they're angry from early experience, to then to try to reason with that, it's very difficult. I mean, we tend to be focused on the intellectual side of things,
yeah,
culture, and don't pay a lot of attention to feeling. An instinct, for example. So for that reason, it's possible to persuade people to do things that are in violation of our instinct and feelings, by giving them information that appears to be persuasive intellectually. And getting back to circumcision, that's a lot of how that effort operates, is they right. come out with study after study after study after study. Now, I point out here that virtually all the studies that are done on circumcision have an intention of trying to find a potential benefit. So these investigators are paid, you know, big money by foundations and pharmaceutical companies and others to come up with a particular result. So no surprise they're going to come up with the result they're looking for. And other professionals in other countries have evaluated these studies and found them seriously flawed. And so and it's possible to manipulate the results to come up with any result, you know, people want. So we end up repeating these traumas and acting out the behaviors that are related to the either the suppressed feelings or the unfulfilled needs. For example, we have a need for high self-esteem.
All right.
Okay. So if we're neglected, for example, in infancy, that is a contributing factor to low self-esteem. So if that happens to somebody and in adulthood, they want to try to support their self-esteem, people can try to, for example, accumulate material possessions. They can be very judgmental of others
right.
who are different from them. I mean, the way this works psychologically is when you put other people down, your benefit, so-called benefit, is you're seeking to improve your own self-esteem. Do you tell yourself, I'm better than them?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. People want to believe I'm better than somebody else to support their own self-esteem. Well, if they had good self-esteem or high self-esteem in the first place, they wouldn't be going through those things. So this can affect, for example, race relations.
Okay.
It's pretty. It takes some effort to get to the psychological origins of these things, and it takes even more effort to try to change them. But if we don't do that, we end up going around the merry-go-round, so to speak, the repeating cycle, as you said, of these behaviors being passed on from one generation to the next. And it's, as we recognize, it's very difficult to change these behaviors and values once they're deeply embedded. So
yeah.
My approach here is let's prevent them in the first place.
The cultural rituals that were handed by, back to the circumcision example, the Judeo-Christian culture, if we've got the Pope saying one thing and we have the community rabbis saying the same similar message, we respond to some people respond to authority in that same manner, like I think you were touching on propaganda there, or dogma in the case of religion. It's pretty strong and persuasive, right, to go against our feelings and instincts.
Well, it is, and the example is we're more likely to accept the opinions of authorities if we're not feeling our truth inside.
Uh-huh.
So the way we get disconnected from our inner truth and instincts is, again, some of these early traumas.
Right.
Because we can't repress feelings and experiences that are overwhelming without it having a general effect on our ability to express emotion and feel emotion. Many men who are circumcised, for example, note that they have reduced emotional expression. That happens to be something that women notice about men in this culture. And women who, for example, from Europe, who come over to the United States, notice a difference in American men about that.
About what? I'm sorry, I missed that.
About a reduced level of emotional expression.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And then that contributes to our cultural value to evaluate things intellectually rather than emotionally or instinctually.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So it's all kind of tied together that way, with early experience, feelings, repressed feelings, and values as we move into adulthood.
Yeah, I think you're giving a little too much credit on the word intellectual, because the dumbing down of our culture has been coming from the side that wants us to behave and not act out and all of that. So,
What I mean there is that the presumed authorities tend to justify and defend certain positions by coming up, but first of all, just by their position, they have a certain amount of respect. And if people aren't questioning authorities, if they're not doing their own investigation, including checking out how they feel about things. Again, imagine yourself being, going back to imagine yourself being on the receiving end of a circumcision. We tend to not empathize with the infant. We tend to put the infant in another category. He won't remember this. He doesn't feel this. Here's an interesting thing about the medical profession. Until 1987, this is documented now, the American medical profession did not believe the newborn infants could feel pain. That shocks a lot of people. 1987. And that's when some parents complained about the American medical profession doing major surgery on infants without pain medication.
Unbelievable.
So,
some
people, in the profession decided to do a wide-ranging review of the issue of pain in infants, and they come up with their conclusion in 1987 that newborn infants feel pain at least as much as adults and probably more.
Right.
So, we're learning. We're still learning about this, and sometimes these learning experiences surprise people because we're not in the medical profession. We're not subject to that culture. We can just trust our own feelings and experience. We know that infants feel pain, but if doctors are doing circumcisions on babies without giving them any pain medication, they're telling themselves, these doctors are, they're not feeling it, or they're not going to remember it, so it's okay. I mean, they have to feel good about what they're doing, otherwise they can't live with themselves, the doctors.
Right.
So they tell themselves myths. That's what happens. That's what human beings do when they want to defend or justify a certain behavior.
All right, let's, it's, we have to talk about some individual authoritarians, historical, like Hitler, Mussolini, whatever. But it's difficult today in the United States because we, in my opinion, we have an inverted totalitarianism. We don't need a Hitler. We don't need a single person to rally behind because we have our oligarchs at the top. So the triangle of one individual at the point of the triangle is upside down. And at the top is a very, very skinny layer, yes, of just a handful sometimes of oligarchs that can have that power. But with that as a backdrop, maybe let's flip to the more easy to talk about. What does motivate a Hitler, a Mussolini, whatever, a Dick Cheney, to really go all out? I mean, talk about a psychological profile. What are these people really like inside their heads?
Well, clearly they're suffering some kind of psychological distress, probably a very old one. And I think these people would be harmless if the rest of the culture and society ignored them.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So my approach here is rather than putting the focus of the blame on the individuals, we have a collective responsibility to do the right thing. We have a collective responsibility to take care of each other.
Right.
To the degree that we don't do that or ignore our instincts and feelings and hurt each other, we're going to end up being influenced disproportionately by people with the power and control. So it's a matter of we need to act on our own power, empower ourselves to speak up, to take action, to participate, join organizations that support what we believe in, to be a part of the political process in any way that we're capable to try to change things.
But the very nature of the system is to discourage that. is to silence dissent.
Exactly, exactly. And so we got a struggle going on here. There's two perspectives. One is we do the best we can with what we have and with the present political system, you know, by empowering ourselves, and we can get to the basic root causes of some of these things by supporting the next generation to help parents, for example, satisfy the needs of their children. Here's a political issue that directly relates to this. We, as the United States, we are a country that has very little support for maternal leave policies.
Right.
Now, most of the mothers in this country that have infants are working outside the home. So they're not with their infants for many hours of the day.
Right.
Very often.
Right.
Okay, so we have our national maternal leave policy is 12 weeks of unpaid leave. Okay, that's one of the worst in the world. There are over 200 countries. Only four countries have a policy of unpaid maternal leave. Huh. Unbelievable. Several European countries have policies of 1 year of maternal leave, and even Austria has a policy of paid maternal leave. Austria has a policy of 3 years of paid maternal leave. So, you know, we talk about family values in this country. We're not supporting keeping the family together and keeping
right.
the mother home to take care of an infant who needs her to be home, who needs to be in contact
yeah.
with her.
Yeah.
So there's a political issue we need to get to work on.
That's a good one. Hold that thought. I have to take care of the federal government for a moment here.
Hi, Jim Hightower here, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook, the most dangerous station in the nation. Remember, you can support WUSB all year long. Just go to their pledge form at www.wusb.fm.
Okay, we've been speaking with Ron Goldman and getting into the psychology of politics. And Ron, before we let you go, I want you to get the last word for one thing. But what did we leave out today that we should have covered?
Okay, well, I want to first thank you for the time. It's great to be able, to share these ideas with you. I want to just remind people if we trust what's natural, if we respect nature, we will not lose our own nature. If we take care of the needs of children, making that a priority, we'll be in much better shape. And when the bond between the child and the mother is disrupted, the bond between the child and humanity is disrupted. So as someone once said, what's done to children, they will do to society. So part of our task here is to take care of the children better than we are. And, you know, we always have something to learn about that. And if people are looking for a more detailed report on some of the things I've been talking about, they can contact me at this email address, rg7846@gmail.com.
Very
good. So there's ways here we can improve our political environment and also do better for the children. So, again, thanks a lot for
Excellent.
A chance to speak with you.
Thank you. Also, two websites, ronaldgoldmanphd.com and circumcision.org. Ron, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it, and maybe we'll talk down the road a bit.
I hope so. Thank you.
You take care. Bye-bye.